All right, welcome back everyone to another episode of Time Out Talk. We're your host, Raphael Singer.
And Hunter Leon.
And before we get into today's episode, we have to talk about a tragedy that occurred this week. 19-year-old freshman from Kentucky, Terrence Clark, unfortunately passed away in a tragic car accident. This came off a day after he signed the biggest contract of his life with Clutch Sports. And it really is just a heartbreaking tragedy. You know, he's gone way too soon. He had such a bright future, and my prayers are with his family.
Yeah, absolutely. My condolences to his friends and family, and all I really have to say about it is just be safe on the road, and, you know, make sure you always tell people you love them, because you never know what's going to happen the next day.
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So, you know, that's a pretty grim topic, but from there I was hoping to transition more so to the hottest team in the NBA right now. And Stephen A must be really happy, the New York Knicks. Julius Randle is playing like a beast, and the Knicks are really in the spotlight right now. Now on their first 9-game winning streak since 2014.
I think they're on a 8-game winning streak.
Oh, 8-game, my bad. Yeah. So 8-game winning streak since 2014. So what are your thoughts, initial thoughts?
I am a huge fan of this Knicks team. I love everything about them. They're so gritty. They're so defensive oriented. And, you know, being a Lakers fan under Frank Vogel, we learned to appreciate good defense. So I'm always a big fan of these really gritty teams who play like one unit. And we've heard comments before that, you know, they don't have like a big three or anything. They have a big 15. And that just shows how much of a team they really are. And we could dive into like individual players. Like you mentioned Julius Randle, what a season he's having. He's going to be in MVP talks, and he's by far and away the front runner for most improved player. The growth he's had this late in his career is pretty remarkable. You know, he's shooting 41% from three. He's a player who was never really a good shooter, and then to just all of a sudden make that jump to shooting 41% from three. Mind you, that's higher than Kyrie Irving. That's higher than James Harden. That's higher than a lot of these good shooters in the NBA. And he's leading this team on offense. We're seeing the growth and emergence of RJ Barrett. He's hit crazy big shots for them in the clutch. His shot has gotten way better. He's shooting over 40% from three since January. And just these role players, like, just are so gritty and play so just play as a unit, and it's so cohesive, and it's just so much fun to watch. And I think they're going to make a lot of noise in the playoffs. What do you think?
Not only that, don't forget they were predicted to be a 20-win team before the start of the season. And I think a big part of all the noise they're making is just how unexpected it was for them to come out and be a potential 3 seed. Right now they're the 4 seed for the playoffs. I mean, they're also very exciting. You have a guy like Derrick Rose, who's now on this team. That's a big fan favorite in general across the NBA. And to see him in Madison Square Garden on the winning team, that's really nice, you know. And yeah. I want to make a comment on your big 15. That's a big 15. Wow. That's a lot of solid players there then, right?
I didn't say that. I mean, that's not like what I'm saying. I forgot who exactly said it. It might have been Randle. Might have been Barrett. But one of them made that comment, and I think that just shows how team-oriented this Knicks squad is. I also, you touched on Derrick Rose. I want to say this, the roster itself is very well constructed. You have to give a lot of credit to Leon Rose and the Knicks front office for developing a very well-rounded roster. You have veterans like Rose, like Taj Gibson on the team, but you also have a lot of youth in RJ Barrett and Emmanuel Quickley, who is having an incredible season for how late they got him. He was such a steal, such a great pickup. And Frank Ntilikina, Mitchell Robinson, who's unfortunately out for the season. But this Knicks team has such a nice blend of youth and veteran experience. And with that defensive mind of Tom Thibodeau, I think this is just a fantastic team.
And not only that, but they sort of have like the in-between guys. They have the young guys and the veteran guys, but they have guys like their centerpiece, Julius Randle, who's in his prime and emerging as the player he really is. So, like you said, it's just a very interesting mix how this team was put together that nobody really expected. And I think that's what makes it so exciting to watch.
Yeah, I don't think anyone, even the most diehard of Knicks fans, could have seen this coming. I know everyone, and me included, had sort of given up on Julius Randle and sort of thought that he was a known quantity. Like, he's just going to be an inefficient scorer who wasn't really great at shooting, and he could never be your number one option on a winning team. But I think he's proven all of us wrong and really laid all those doubts to rest with the season he's having now.
Yeah, and I think I just want to go player by player on this team, because this is a team that's really interesting to look at their construction. I think so. Their starting point guard is Elfrid Payton. Starting shooting guard is Reggie Bullock. Starting small forward is RJ Barrett. Then obviously Julius Randle, the power forward, and Nerlens Noel at center. So I sort of want to just ask you, how would you break down that starting lineup and how they play?
Well, I think the weakest link there by far is Elfrid Payton. When you watch him play, he is always the one making the most mistakes. He turns the ball over too much. He's not great at shooting. And you always would want someone like Quickly or someone like Rose there in his place. But I guess he plays his role, and it's been working thus far. So, I mean, maybe the Knicks probably know more than I do. I think Reggie Bullock is a great shooter. We had him on the Lakers for a little bit. He does his job, and, you know, he plays all right defense too. RJ Barrett, as we mentioned before, he's grown a lot. He's become a much better shooter now, and he is just improving at such a tremendous rate, especially after he had what I would consider to be a pretty disappointing first season. Then, as we've already talked about, Randle, MVP candidate, just proving all of us wrong, surpassing all expectations. Then I think Nerlens Noel is playing as a great backup instead of Mitchell Robinson. He's doing his job. He's catching lobs and blocking shots and grabbing boards, which is basically all he has to do.
All right. So then another thing I'm going to touch on with the Knicks is Frank Ntilikina. So They don't really give him many minutes, and he's obviously a young guy, and he isn't really getting the chance to develop outside of practice. So do you think they need to move him out of respect, or do you think they just hold on to him because he doesn't really seem to have a place on this now playoff team?
Yeah, I mean, I think that if you're looking to the very immediate short term, maybe they would have moved him at the deadline. But I think them holding on to Frank Ntilikina shows that they're willing to make that long-term commitment with him. I know all the Knicks fans love Frank. He's sort of like their version of Alex Caruso. He makes a lot of good winning plays, especially on the defensive end. And I think that when you have like veterans occupying that primary guard spot, you have Rose, you have Payton, you know, those spots are going to open up eventually. And if Frank keeps playing well and he keeps improving as he sort of has been, then I think that he'll find his way into the rotation soon enough.
All right. And then from there, I want to transition a little bit more towards the Julius Randle talk. And that is the MVP talk. There's been a lot of noise recently surrounding the MVP talk because a lot of unexpected candidates have come up. You have Julius Randle, you have Steph Curry, and you have also the expected guys. You have Jokic, Embiid, and who else would be up there? Giannis. Would be your fifth? And Giannis. Like, you could put Giannis there. Yeah.
I think you have to put Giannis there. Like, the Bucks are having one of the most slept on seasons in recent memory. Like, Giannis is playing like he is just as valid an MVP candidate as Embiid and as Jokic, in my opinion.
Yeah, I agree. I think a big part of the MVP, according to the NBA, would be the story. Right. And that's why nobody really has ever won it three times in a row, because it's just the story gets old.
Well, they have. I mean, it's just like Larry Bird. That was so long ago, you know? Like,
yeah, no, exactly. I'm saying nobody really does it. It's happened, but nobody really does it often, because, I mean, in that case, you could say there's been plenty of players who should have gotten it every year. I mean, you have, you know, your Michael Jordans, you have your LeBrons, your Kobes, those guys. You could argue, hey, those guys should have been winning it every single year of their prime. Basically, it's about a story.
Narrative definitely does factors into it in a big way. That's, I mean, even last year, like, although I think LeBron had a really strong case for it, I think a big part of that too was the fact that he was 35 years old, you know, 17th season, and like that sort of narrative aspect, which really should have no impact on his chances in MVP, definitely helped his odds a lot.
So your personal belief is that narrative should have no impact on MVP?
I think it should have very little. I think that MVP as an award, like, let's just spell it out, most valuable player, it should go to the player who provides the most value to their team. So I think that narrative, while is it's not, it doesn't really factor into that, you know, like.
So who would you say is the most valuable player this year so far?
I would have to give it to Embiid right now. He's led their team to the one seed. They've battled injuries. Simmons has been out and he's playing phenomenal. Like he's playing like the best offensive player and is playing phenomenal defense too. So I think it's Embiid.
Could you not argue that Steph Curry is the most valuable player to his own team? He obviously is to the Warriors, no question, the most valuable player to that team, but you could argue he's the most value of any player on any team in the league. Why aren't you putting him there?
That's a fair point, but I guess MVP is sort of a misnomer. Like in all, I guess the way they calculate value is like the team also has to be doing well for you to be contributing value, because anyone can sort of put up a bunch of numbers on a losing team, right? Like we've seen this with Bradley Beal. Like the numbers Bradley Beal has been putting up the past few seasons, like he should be in MVP talks if it was just off of pure individual performance. But value in terms of MVP sort of factors in team success as one of the metrics. So the winner of the MVP award, unless we're looking at a completely exceptional scenario like Westbrook in 2017, like it's always going to go to probably the best player on the best team. That's just how it sort of works out.
Okay, I see what you're saying. But don't you feel that Steph Curry has been breaking so many records lately that at least has to be a factor and he has to at least get a good amount of votes? Because he's arguably playing better than in his unanimous season.
Right, but how's the team doing?
They're about 500 right now.
Yeah, they're the 10th seed. They're not even in the playoffs.
Correct.
Do you think, say the Warriors, say we ended the season right now, where would you have Steph Curry top five, or like even in top five in MVP voting?
Yes, I would have Steph Curry in top five in MVP voting.
So a player on a 10 seed could be top five in MVP voting.
Yeah, I think top fives, there have definitely been guys in the top five to have been really low seeds.
So then why isn't Bradley Beal getting talked about in MVP?
Well, Bradley Beal isn't breaking records like Steph is.
Sure he is. I mean, the numbers he's putting up are ridiculous. Like, he's putting up 30-plus every single night, basically.
No, but what Steph Curry did is at his age, at 31 years old.
Oh, so no. See, this is where the narrative starts factoring
in. Yeah, exactly. But then I'm saying the narrative does currently factor into this award.
Do you think it should, though?
I think it should have a minimal role, but I think there should be a little bit of it, because obviously, yes, there's a player legacy that does have to occur, but it's also a fan thing. A lot of what the MVP is appeasing to the fans. I mean, like,
I don't think that's necessarily true. Like, take for example, take the 2006 season, right? Kobe had his best individual season of all time, but he didn't win the MVP. Steve Nash did, because he was the most valuable player. He provided the most value to his team and took a mediocre Suns team, basically, and, you know, made them, I can't remember exactly what, but one or two in the West. So,
well, I think also a part of the reason the MVP goats go the way they do is because of who gets the votes.
Right.
It's pretty much media, mainly.
Don't coaches have a factor in as well?
Sorry, what?
I'm pretty sure, don't coaches have a say in it as well?
Yeah, coaches do have a say, but I believe that media is the majority percentage of that.
Well, in theory, that should work, right? Because media, in theory, as I keep stating, like, should have the most knowledge of the game. They're the ones whose job it is to keep track of what's happening in the league, how players are performing, to watch basketball. So obviously, I think, like, in theory, it differs, because, you know, like, there are a lot of members of the media who have some pretty bewildering takes. But
there's a lot of biased opinions. So, I mean,
yeah,
looking at a lot of things, I mean, you could argue Jrue Holiday should be first team all defense every single year, but he's pretty much snubbed every year. And you get guys like Patrick Beverley on the first team because the guys in the media. I mean, it's just really shocking to see some of the takes that these guys have.
Yeah, it's interesting. And I don't really know a work around it, because no matter what you choose, there's always going to be bias. Like, if it was solely based off of, say, coaches and players voting for MVP, for example, they're going to have biases. They're going to vote for their teammates. They're going to vote for their friends. So there's no way to get a really objective standard. And obviously everyone's going to disagree. Like, we've disagreed even just now on what we think the MVP should like mean. Right. So I think that it tends to average out. Like, the MVP very rarely goes to someone who you could be like, they did not deserve it whatsoever. You know, it usually is like pretty marginal if you have a disagreement.
Yeah, I could see that. So on that topic, what should be the requirements for the award? Because like you said, there's a lot of not necessarily like straight lines. They're pretty blurred lines on what exactly qualifies an MVP.
That's a tough question, to be honest. Like, I think as the award is right now, I think that might be just the best state you're going to get it in. Like, I think if you were to like rename the award to the best player award and to give it to the best player, then you're going to have times probably where it's going to be a player is putting up ridiculous individual stats on a losing team, or you're going to have a Bradley Beal winning MVP type situation. And I don't know, like, I think right now it values team success a lot as well. And I think that's an important component.
Yeah. I mean, I'd agree that team success is important, but aren't those factors sometimes not necessarily because of the player who's the MVP?
True. But basketball is a sport where truly phenomenal individual performance can sometimes elevate the level of the team beyond the players on paper. We've seen that before. We've seen that many times. We've seen players taking terrible teams or teams that are not good at all on paper, elevating them to that next level and winning the MVP as a result. Like, I just mentioned Steve Nash, he won it twice. We mentioned Westbrook, you know, like that Thunder team after KD left was not expected to do anything. They were expected to be in the lottery, and he took them all the way to the playoffs, the seventh seed. So, like,
I mean, let's not pretend like Paul George wasn't there. Was he there on 2018? Oh, it was 2018. Yeah, my bad. Oops. I'm really trying to discredit Russell Westbrook here.
Yeah, he did it all by himself. Yeah, with who do you have? Like Andre Roberson? Yeah, he had a lot of help there.
Steven Adams.
Yeah, a lot of shooting on that. And as we know, Russell Westbrook thrives when there's no spacing on his team, which is even more incredible. Also, I would like to take this opportunity to talk about Steph Curry's historic run, because while it has been incredibly impressive and it has been historic in some senses, let's not pretend that Damian Lillard did not have a comparable, if not better, run last year, putting up absurd numbers, carrying a ridiculously injured Blazers squad to the playoffs. And he doesn't get talked about it. Like that run barely gets mentioned. And he wasn't in the – people weren't demanding that Dame win MVP or that he even be included in talks. So I think that just goes to show that the bigger name players in the bigger markets get more of the recognition, even if they're putting up similar, if not like worse, stats or going on similar, if not worse.
Well, I feel like a big part of that also comes from even the players themselves that have said Steph Curry is even on another level than Damian Lillard. There have been players who came out and said this. I was just listening to The Old Man and the Three, which is JJ Redick's podcast, and he was on there with Drew Holiday, somebody who defends, you know, Steph Curry every time they play. And Damian Lillard and Steph Curry, they both came up, and JJ Redick essentially asked, so who's harder to guard, or what do you do when one of these guys gets in the hot streak? And what ended up happening was Drew Holiday, he only talked about Steph. He didn't even mention Dame, because all he could think about was how hard it is to guard Steph himself.
Right. And I mean, that sort of goes back to what we were talking about earlier about like players have biases, you know, like probably like Drew Holiday is one player. He's had his personal experiences, his personal like moments where Steph Curry goes off and that's incredible. And like that leaves an impact, but that shouldn't influence us as like objective viewers and fans of the game from recognizing and I guess prioritizing greatness. You know, like we can say that one run was better than the other and sort of understand that what Drew Holiday is saying or what these players and coaches are saying is just their opinion.
Yeah, I mean, it's their opinion, but they're also the closest to the actual action, so they can feel it the most. I mean, when you sit at a game, at any basketball game, and you sit in the third row, the highest row in Staples Center, it's a much different experience from when you sit on the floor and you can actually hear LeBron James commanding the team and you get a real experience for who that player is and how much more valuable they are than you'd see from sitting at home.
Sure. So if we're going to go by that, then there's no way like we're ever going to reach, like the reason why we use stats and why we look at numbers and percentages is because those are objective. Everyone can look at those and see the same thing. Two players guarding the same player are going to have wildly different experiences. So I think that player experience should be minimal, if not like, if none.
Yeah, but statistics will tell you that Kobe Bryant wasn't a good player, but there's also the eye test. The statistics will tell you that, look, Kobe Bryant doesn't have the legacy that he truly does. I mean, his statistics, his field goal percentages, his true shooting, his win shares, everything will tell you that Kobe Bryant probably shouldn't be a top 10 player, but that's just not true.
Okay, I will qualify with this. That's true that stats can be sometimes misleading in the fact that, like, there's no way to see it just in terms of looking at true shooting percentage. Like, if someone is a clutch player, if they make big time shots, if they shrink in the moment, these sorts of things. So I think what I'm trying to say is that you as an individual with your eye test, that should only confirm what the statistics are saying, but you shouldn't like solely take one or the other, you know, like you can't only look at numbers and make your say MVP pick based off that, but you also can't solely just like watch a couple games and then be like, okay, I'm just going to pick this person because in the games that I saw, they played pretty well. You know, you have to sort of get a balance of both.
Yeah, I'd agree. But I think statistics is something that's relatively new to the NBA in general and is being used a lot more today than it was ever before, like to affect players and how we are influenced in voting. So I think the eye test matters a little bit more just personally to me than statistics do.
Sure. I mean, it's usually those two things are pretty, I mean, those two things are usually pretty congruent though. Like when Kobe was averaging 35 in 06, you're going to know that he's like one of the best players in the NBA just by watching him. You don't have to know any of the numbers he's putting up just to see that, you know, or even this season, like if you knew nothing about the numbers and you watch a Sixers game or you watch a Nuggets game or even a Bucks game at that, for that matter, you're going to know that Giannis, Embiid, and Jokic are some of the best players in the league. Like, you don't need the numbers to confirm. You don't need the numbers just to know that.
Yeah. Okay. I see your meaning about that.
Yeah.
So then from there, I think we had a pretty good talk about MVPs and what that sort of stuff means. So I was hoping to transition to playoff talk about these teams. Can any of these teams make it out of the first round and what are their odds of doing so? So I guess where I want to start is the Mavericks, because that's an interesting one to look at. So what are your initial thoughts on the Mavericks?
The Mavericks will not make it out of the first round. They, I don't know. I'm thoroughly disappointed by the Mavericks this season. I thought that Luka Doncic, he was going to continue the sort of unbelievable sort of emergence we saw in the playoffs last season. Obviously, he was ridiculous last season and the regular season too. But I thought he would be able to propel his team to a higher seed. But I mean, the West is super stacked, so you can't really fault it. But I just don't think there's enough talent. You know, you have Luka, who's an incredible player. Porzingis has been sort of disappointing this season. You have a great player, Jalen Brunson, and solid pieces like Josh Richardson. And I just think that this team just doesn't have enough. You know, they don't have enough firepower to be a team like the Suns.
I do think a big part of their success and their momentum was Seth Curry. I think that that was a big part of their team and their energy and the efficiency off the bench. I think that could have raised them two or three seeds even.
I doubt it. No, I would disagree with that. I think that the trade made sense at the time. Like, they had enough shooting. They had a guy like Maxi Kleba, Porzingis, like these guys who could stretch the floor. What they did, what they needed was defense. And they sacrificed a little bit of shooting with giving up Curry to get Richardson, who's a much better defender. And they brought in more shooting with J.J. Redick. J.J. Redick fills the same void that Seth Curry left. So I think that shooting really isn't the issue here. It's literally just talent. Like, they just don't have enough talent, in my opinion.
Well, as it stands right now, they'd be facing off against the Suns. So you definitely don't think they could make it out of that round. But how many games do you think they'll take it to?
I think it would be like a 5-game series, maybe 6. If
really? 5? What makes you think it would go so quick?
The Suns are just a way better all-around team. I think that, you know, Chris Paul, he always just takes his team to the next level, especially in the playoffs. They just have winning players. Mikal Bridges is a winning player. Devin Booker is a winning player. And they have way more talent. They play better. I think they're better coached, at least this season. And I just think that they're just going to make quick work of the Mavericks. They just don't have enough.
But even the Mavericks last year were able to take the Clippers to a really hard-fought series, and that was pretty much just on Luka's back.
That's true. That's a good point. I mean, I guess I'm waiting to see if Luka will be able to replicate that. So maybe I'll give them 6 games, but I think that – I don't know. I think that this Suns team is much, much more different than that Clippers team. I think – there was a lot of flaws with that Clippers team, and that was sort of exposed by Luka.
And I know this is a little off topic here, but speaking of the Clippers, that Rajon Rondo trade, that does really fill their void. So what do you think of their odds this year?
Oh, they have been unbelievable. Like, they have been, ever since that trade, they're up there against the Knicks for, like, hottest team right now. They are playing phenomenal. Paul George, like, for as much as he gets disrespected, and in my opinion, rightly so, for his lackluster playoff performances, he has been stepping it up. He's been absolutely balling out, like, and the Clippers are going on a great win streak right now.
He's known to be a great regular season player. I mean, he was a top three MVP candidate when he was on the OKC Thunder.
That's true. That's true. Yeah, so I just think that, like, Paul George gets slandered way too much, especially on, like, NBA Twitter. Anytime he has some sort of low light or makes a mistake, everyone, you know, comes in with the playoff P's. Oh, playoff PP, like PG 13%, like they just roast him. And I mean, like, he has disappointed in the playoffs, but, like, you can't just hold that against him every time he, like, messes up in the regular season, you know?
Yeah, we might have hated on Danny Green a little too much in that same way.
Rightly so. No, Danny Green, we were okay to hate on. Well, we talked about Danny Green last season. We all we said was, look, we can excuse the regular season misses and, you know, how his one job is to shoot threes and play defense, and he can do neither. As long as he's just going to hit the big shots in the playoffs, that's why we got him. And then guess what? He has the big shot to win the championship, and he misses. So all the Danny Green slander was right, and it was totally justified, and we should continue to slander Danny Green.
Okay, anyways, back on topic here. another team who I wanted to talk about was the Blazers. What are their odds making it out of the first round? As of right now, they'd be facing off against the Clippers. That's a tough matchup.
That is the worst matchup for the Blazers, in my opinion. Like, they match up so poorly against the Clippers. They, like, lose every single time I watch them play. I think that, honestly, the Clippers would probably make short work of that, like 5 games, if that.
I mean, I'd agree with you there. I don't think there's a lot of room for argument. The Clippers just have too much defense on guards. I mean, Paul George probably steps up in that situation, even if he's not playing well on offense, just to lock down either CJ or Dame. I mean, or at least contain them, because you can't lock them down. And then you have, I guess, Kawhi versus Roko. And yeah. Roko is not going to stop Kawhi. That's plain and simple.
Yeah, not many people.
Not going to happen.
I will say about the Blazers, like, I think their coaching situation is really something that needs to be looked into. I've heard a lot about Terry Stotts and his lackluster coaching, to put it nicely. And I think that their, like, first round exit this year will be sort of an indication that they need to go in a new direction in terms of coaching. Fire Terry Stotts and to hire someone new, because it really is disappointing. This Blazers team on paper they are so stacked. They have so much talent, but the fact that they're just so bad defensively and their offense is so stagnant and relying on ISOs is due in large part to their coaching. So I hope next season they're able to put it together more.
Yeah, hopefully. I'd agree with all the things you said, but one thing I want to touch on with the Clippers. So I think the only weak spot that the Blazers would be able to expose is the lack of defense by Rajon Rondo. I think that would be their only opportunity, really, is when Rajon Rondo's on the floor to get in an awkward matchup against Dame, and Dame can do his thing. But I don't see that being enough to carry them out of the first round.
I think, like, individual defense in that sense is a little overrated. Like, I mean, while, yeah, like, on that matchup on paper is like, oh, shoot, Dame is just going to absolutely destroy Rondo. Like, I think teams now with the, you know, a really, like, higher usage of zone defense and the fact that players switch a lot more, that makes it so that, like, an individual mismatch is going to have less of an effect on affecting the outcome of a series. Like, we saw this last year with the Blazers. Like, people were saying before the Lakers played them, oh, who on the Lakers is going to be able to guard Dame and CJ? But guess how that turned out? Like, it literally played no impact. The Lakers team defense was able to stop them enough to win that series pretty easily in five games.
Yep. And now a team we were talking about, pretty hot team, the Knicks again. Are they going to be able to make it out of the first round? A lot of people have questions about that, even though they do have a lot of regular season success. As of right now, they'd be playing off against the Hawks.
What do you think of that matchup, Hunter?
Well, initially, I don't know. That's an interesting matchup. I think a lot of the deficiencies and the inefficient offense of the Hawks would really shine in that series. Like, Trae Young is not an efficient player. It's like a dollar store James Harden almost. But that's just my personal opinion on the Hawks. I'm not too big on them, even though they did pick up a lot of great pieces. I just don't see how they're going to be able to, like, beat a very team-oriented style of play from the Knicks, where the Hawks is a very sort of isolation-style offense with, like, Clint Capella there to get offensive boards.
Yeah, definitely. I would just have to agree on everything you said. Like, not crazy big on the Hawks, and I am very, very big on the Knicks. In fact, the Knicks are going to the NBA Finals. No, I'm just kidding. Not that big of the Knicks. I do think if they keep this 4-5 matchup, I think they can go to the second round. But unfortunately, that's where I see.
It would be fun to see Knicks Nets second round, because that's what it would be.
Oh, that would be such a gritty series. Oh my goodness, we need that.
I mean, I don't know, Rafa, if you're really thinking that Knicks Nets is a hard fought matchup.
It would be an incredibly gritty matchup. Every single time they've played, it's been hard fought, very defensive oriented. These two teams scrap with each other a lot, and the fan bases are really, like, hostile toward each other. And there's this very, like, bitter rivalry that's sort of emerging between these two franchises. So I think that series would actually be really, really good.
I think it'll be fun to watch, but at the same time, I think the only downside of the Nets could possibly be chemistry, which is the same thing the Clippers had last year. But even then, I don't really see many deficiencies in their gameplay aside from a lack of defensive identity.
Yeah, that's fair. And the Nets are, don't get me wrong, the Nets are really good. I think their biggest thing would just be injuries. Like, they've been struggling with injuries the whole year. It's whether they could stay healthy and sort of put it all together for the playoffs.
Do you think Spencer Dinwiddie will come back for the playoffs? Because it is possible. I think they've talked about his injury status would be its potential for him to come back in, like, a second round series.
I don't know. I doubt they would, though. Like, he's been out basically the whole season, and they've been gelling without him. And if he's going to come back, he would have to come on a minutes restriction. He wouldn't be able to play 100% for a long time, and that would just sort of throw everything off. So even if he was able to come back, I doubt he would be a big piece of the Nets in the playoffs.
Yeah, okay. So you're big Knicks guy. I think that's still a hard-fought series between the Knicks and the Hawks. I think that's a possible 6-game series, maybe 7 games, even though I do think the Knicks probably take it.
All right. What do you think about the Indiana Pacers? They're not really in the playoff picture right now, but it's very possible that they will be.
It's a weird situation with the Pacers. I mean, what are they going for? Because they're kind of stuck in that like Orlando Magic purgatory where it's like you have a good team focused on an all-star center with pretty solid pieces surrounding him and some young talent and some veteran players, but none of it is good enough to get you into the second round. And you're always stuck in that first round purgatory where you're never getting a good draft pick and you're never getting it out of the first round. So they just have to really pick like a path, which is, do you carry on with Domantas Sabonis and try to trade away some pieces? You have Caris LeVert and Domantas Sabonis as your core, and maybe you trade Miles Turner and some other assets to maybe create a real big three.
Yeah.
But I just don't really see what they're doing right now.
Yeah, I agree. They are sort of stuck in that Orlando Magic spot, and Sabonis is really in that Vucevic scenario. I think I would want to see Miles Turner shipped off somewhere else. I think that him and Sabonis is a little bit of an awkward fit. Like, they don't really work together, in my opinion. But I do think they made a great acquisition in getting Caris LeVert. Like, that's exactly the sort of player that they needed, that sort of guard wing player who can score and be that nice 1-2 punch with Sabonis. So maybe trying to trade Sabonis, or trade Turner rather, for some younger assets and sort of try to hit that soft rebuild where you're sort of going to be contending, but still trying to focus on developing young talents and building a stronger core so that you can actually be a playoff contender. I mean, a championship contender later down the line.
But who are they really developing, even if they're getting young pieces? Like, let's say I'm looking at the Pacers lineup right now. So I'm just trying to really look at this and say, you have a guy like Malcolm Brogdon, like you have some good veteran players. Are you just going to get rid of all these guys? Like, I don't really understand what they can do, even with what they have, because nobody on their team has an outrageous contract.
That's true. And I don't know. I think you could. Like, I mean, obviously they're missing TJ Warren this year, which is a big loss for them, because we saw basically how TJ Warren in the bubble was better than Michael Jordan in his prime. So, I mean, if you can replicate that next season, like maybe they can be a championship contender. But no, I do think that like maybe blowing it all up would be worth it. I don't know. I'm just like Malcolm Brogdon, a core of a starting lineup of Malcolm Brogdon, Caris LeVert, TJ Warren, Domantas Sabonis, and Miles Turner sounds like an eighth seed to me. Sounds like an eighth seed or seventh seed. And I don't think that's good enough in this day and age of the NBA.
Really? I mean, with all of them healthy, I feel like that's a pretty solid. I think that's maybe a five seed, but even then, that's still like a first round hell situation.
Really? Because let me just tell you right now, we talked about this, the five seed right now is the Hawks. The Celtics are a six seed. The Heat are a seven seed. You know, these teams are like, the East is honestly pretty stacked now. Like, it's a much harder conference than it used to be in years prior. So I think that if you want to actually be a contender, you have to come with a lot more firepower. And as the Indiana Pacers stand right now, I don't think they have it.
Okay. And on that topic, that kind of reminds me of what's going on in the West right now, which is, keep in mind, one of these teams isn't going to be making it out of the first round. You have the Jazz, the Suns, the Clippers, the Nuggets, and the Lakers. That's five teams.
Yeah.
One of these teams just will not be able to make it to the second round, and that's crazy to me because all of these teams do deserve that. So of these five teams, who do you think is the losing team? And this is assuming there's no upsets.
Denver, easily. No question.
Denver? Yeah. Really?
Yes.
Do you think that's because of the loss of Jamal Murray?
Yeah. And I know that they haven't lost. Like, I think they haven't lost yet. Since they've lost Jamal Murray, but
yeah, they're on a four-game win streak right now.
The standard as it is right now is that, or the standings as they are right now is that they would have to play the Lakers in the first round, and I think that we're gonna see something like that because of the injuries to the Lakers and because of, you know, their schedule moving forward. That the Nuggets are just gonna be unfortunately paired up with a really tough first round matchup against the Lakers, who have no business being a five seed, by the way. So I think that without Jamal Murray as well, who was so big for them in the playoffs, like he was better than Jokic last season in the bubble. And obviously like the bubble was different, but like without Jamal Murray, I don't really think that, I think they're easily the worst squad of these five that you mentioned.
Do you think, I don't know. I think the Jazz are a great team, but I'm just not sure because of what happened last year. They're up 3-1, and obviously they're not going to make that mistake again. They're going to take that approach properly. Like Donovan Mitchell is probably going to take that game five way more seriously than he did before. But I just feel like they're built for the regular season.
What about them? Or do you not buy in?
I buy in to that Mike Conley is a big impact on to what their team success is now. I don't buy in to the fact that if Donovan Mitchell is off, I don't know who's taking that last shot, or I don't know. It'll still be Donovan Mitchell, even if he's off, but I don't know who's that second star who's going to be able to provide offense.
I have a question.
Yes, go ahead.
Couldn't you make this same case about like the 2019 Raptors? Like you have a solidified star, right? Who's been known to perform in the playoffs.
But you have a superstar. That's different. You have a superstar.
Mitchell is a superstar?
Okay, Donovan Mitchell is a all-star, border superstar. He's not there yet, but he's close to it. And the difference is people were saying that Kawhi Leonard is taking LeBron's throne in the NBA. Nobody's saying that about Donovan Mitchell.
That was after he won the championship, though. No one was saying that before he won the championship.
Yeah, I mean, even with that, you have Kawhi Leonard's status as an NBA player in 2019 was much higher than Donovan Mitchell's ever is or has been.
Sure. I mean, he had a finals MVP. He had a defensive player of the year. That's true.
But he already had the finals experience.
My point is that you have a player who is the focal point of the offense, basically, and then you have a good, solid team surrounding him who, you know, it plays well, is very well coached, has a good defensive mindset, but there's no like solidified number two, you know?
They had a solidified number two in Kyle Lowry, who did all the dirty work and could get you a bucket if he needed to.
That's true. That's fair, I guess.
I mean, Mike Conley can provide a lot of offense, but he isn't necessarily the guy to get you a bucket.
Really?
He isn't gonna set your defense the same way that Kyle Lowry is.
Wait, so what? Okay, but you have Rudy Gobert for that. Like, so what is it? Do you think the Jazz lack someone who can get you a bucket because you have Conley for that? Or do you need a guy who's going to be that defensive anchor because you have Gobert for that?
Gobert's defensive anchor, but I don't think he's like a very vocal defensive anchor. Obviously, I'm not on the floor, but I feel like these teams like this, I mean, one player on defense just isn't enough. And you obviously have other guys there too, but I buy into Nikola Jokic being able to, let's say it was a Nuggets Jazz matchup again, but you take
Jamal Murray of the picture. Jazz matchup would be in the second round. This question is about a team not making out of the first round.
Okay, yeah. So as of right now, absolutely. I think even more with that, I think it could be the Jazz because let's say the Warriors play the Jazz.
Okay, let's stop this blasphemy. The Warriors would get smoked by the Jazz. It would be a sweep. It would be 4-0 and it would be an opening.
No. I buy into Steph Curry. I buy into Steph Curry. Absolutely. On
30% shooting.
Are you serious? 25 points on 30% shooting.
Yes.
For Steph Curry in a playoff situation.
Yes. He would be absolutely clamped up.
By who?
What do you mean by the entire Jazz team? Who else are they going to worry about on the Warriors team? They're going to worry about Andrew Wiggins dominating? No, they're not. They're going to send double teams, taking the ball out of Curry's hands. Look, Curry, he's not going to be able to have these ridiculous performances in the playoffs. We've seen time and time again that good teams know how to shut down star players in the playoffs when they're just one player and there's no one else.
What they're going to force to have happen is Draymond Green's going to take up the ball and Steph Curry's going to have to play off ball.
Okay, then they're just going to double him.
Steph Curry can play off ball and get around screen. Steph Curry is quick.
Guess what?
Steph Curry will get his points in.
They're not – look, Curry, yeah. I said that, didn't I? I said he's going to average 25, but it's just going to
No, it's going to be more than 25, and that's going to be on more than 30% efficiency, my friend.
No, he will not. Okay, maybe I'll give you this. 31%. How about that?
Oh, yeah, the 1%. Thank you. Exactly. That's what I wanted to hear.
Okay, great. But yeah,
no, but I could see more than in any other series, I can see just the Jazz falling to essentially Steph Curry.
You gotta stop sleeping on the Jazz. They're good. They're really good. Like
they're good, but to me, that's that Nuggets. It's those 2019 Nuggets. That's how I see them.
Didn't the 2019 Nuggets make it to the second round though?
Yes, but my point is that's not what I mean.
Hold on, weren't they one game away from making it to the conference finals too?
Correct. But yeah. That's my point. Is I see them as that one seed who just shouldn't be there.
But the Nuggets weren't the one seed, though. They were
The two seed. Still, a high seed that just shouldn't be there.
But they...
how I see them.
I mean, they've played the best this whole season. What about that? What about that? Do they not deserve the one seed? They've been the best team this season. Just because people coming into the season didn't expect for them to be this good doesn't mean they don't deserve it.
I watched the Jazz play the Lakers, I want to say 3 or 4 days ago, and neither team had star players playing. There was no Anthony Davis, no LeBron, no Rudy Gobert, no Donovan Mitchell. And the Lakers role players completely outplayed the Jazz role players, just plain and simple. Like
you're gonna take the game without Donovan Mitchell, Mike Conley, Rudy Gobert, and also Derek Favors as a barometer for what the Jazz are as a team?
It tells me what their role players are. It tells me as a team, besides their star players, who do they really have?
Jordan Clarkson.
Yes, exactly. That's it.
Sixth man of the year.
Yeah. I mean, that's an incredible player to have on your team. But it's not enough just to be stars in the sixth man.
Oh yeah, we didn't even mention Donovan Mitchell as an MVP candidate. I don't think he's a serious one, but he is top 10. No,
I can't even. Top 10. Top 10 MVP candidates. You have 10 out of the 30 teams in the league with an MVP candidate. That doesn't mean anything.
Top 7.
That still means nothing. I think top 5 is the farthest you can go down the MVP ladder.
Okay, man. All right. I mean, okay. Regardless, you have a Defensive Player of the Year candidate in Rudy Gobert. You have basically the sixth man of the year in Jordan Clarkson. You have, and I'll take this with a grain of salt, you have an MVP candidate in Donovan Mitchell.
No.
What part of that is not a team that can win a championship?
And you I don't buy that they can win a championship. I do not buy that they can win a championship. Not in this conference.
You have
not in this league.
I didn't even mention you have the coach of the year as well, Quinn Snyder. He's done
coach of the year comes with the best team. That's how that works.
Oh, so the Jazz are the best team
by record.
They've also been playing. Okay, let's.
Nick Nurse.
How do you get the best record in the NBA?
By having a good team, not necessarily the best team, a healthy, good team.
Okay.
You have to have a healthy team who is good at playing in the regular season.
Interesting. Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
If it were based on what team had the most talent, shouldn't the Lakers be the one seed, or the Clippers, the Bucks?
The injuries are.
Or the Nets?
No, but even when the Lakers and Clippers were fully healthy, the Jazz were still better than them record wise.
I mean, that was just the beginning of the season. Once a full season plays out, it's different.
Look, man, I don't think we're going to come to an agreement on the Jazz. I'm very big on them. I think they could make it all the way to the conference finals. That would not surprise me. I think, though, that more likely they're going to run into the second round, like, and play a team like the Clippers or something and lose, maybe.
Let me preface it this way. I wouldn't be surprised if they made it out of the first round, but I also wouldn't be surprised if they didn't.
I would be very surprised because, okay, look, another team that they could play, other two teams that they could play are Memphis or San Antonio. Do you really think the Grizzlies or the Spurs can beat the Jazz?
No, I think the only team of those three teams that could beat the Jazz are the Warriors.
But the only reason you think the Warriors are good is because Steph Curry is playing really well.
Not just because Steph is playing well. I believe that Steph by himself, isolated in the playoff situation, will pull out things we haven't seen before from a point guard.
What do you have to base this off of? When, like,
my belief in Steph Curry as a player.
Oh yeah, like, did he do something crazy in the finals in 2019 when it was just him?
No.
Did he carry his team? I didn't think so.
Not against a loaded Raptors team.
Oh, and now he's going up against a loaded Jazz team. No. See, the Warriors, the Raptors-Jazz connection was a
great. It's not the same type of load. I'm telling you, you're trying to compare Donovan Mitchell to Kawhi Leonard.
Yes. Obviously, I think Kawhi Leonard is much better.
And you're trying to compare Mike Conley to Kyle Lowry, which is a little more comparable. That's more comparable, but it's not the same level. And then your third man, you're going to call, like, Pascal Siakam, I guess, to, like, Rudy Gobert. Rudy
Gobert is better than Pascal Siakam.
Yes, but you can't really compare the two. They're just different.
Yes, but if you're starting a team, right? I guess that's a bad way to put it. Who do you think is a better NBA player? Like, if we're looking
we're looking at the overall, we're going to say that Rudy Gobert is a better player.
There we go. So the point being is that the Jazz are a better team, or the Jazz are a very, very well-rounded, good team, and Steph Curry is not going to do anything against them.
We'll see what happens. We'll see what happens, man.
Or more like, we will see what will not happen in terms of Steph Curry, because he's not going to be doing anything.
We'll put money on it.
This man, he needs to worry about making it to the playoffs first. Then he needs to start worrying about beating the Jazz.
All right. I think that's a good place to end it off for this episode. Right. Too much arguing for one day.
Yeah, for sure. All right. Thank you all for listening. This was another very fun episode, and we'll see you all next week. Bye-bye.